And then there is also other group around Starobinsky with Barbinsky, by now you get the impression that this is a very Russian name, Kamenschik, and just to cite someone that is not Russian, there is also a very nice paper by Wilczek with Desimone and Hertzberg. In which you can find a development of this model going, if you like, from the basic setup of the model at the classical level to very sophisticated calculations after two loops of quantum correction, which make, if you like, a very nice reading in which you, if you read these papers, you kind of take this model seriously because it's very beautiful. Okay? Very minimal, it's Higgs, so the inflaton is going to be the Higgs. And it only depends basically on one tunable parameter as it is presented. And therefore, by the end of these papers, you are making predictions about relations between the spectral parameter and the Higgs mass. Now, our contribution or our remark is contained in the paper in collaboration with José Ramón Espinosa from Barcelona. This is year D79, the archive is 09030355. There is a basically a simultaneous paper which contains basically the same stuff by Burgess, Lee, and Trott. You can find in 09024465. It contains basically the same remark, although the emphasis or implications is slightly different. So what we make is a very simple remark, which is, despite being simple, is not completely trivial, which sort of casts a dim light on the brightness of all these results. Okay, so it's like a warning. So let me just explain the basic facts about Higgs inflation. So a priori, you would say that with a potential of this form, lambda over 4 h squared minus v squared squared, you would never dare do inflation with this. Despite this being the Drosophila fly, according to Kaufman, of inflation, v is of order 2005 and 2050 dB. Lambda is going to be between 0.4, 0.1 phenomenologically, so you will never achieve a slow roll with this. Okay. However, a mild modification of this, just adding a good old non-minimal coupling to background curvature, turns out to produce for you a model of inflation which satisfies all the, if you like, preliminary checks. The only bad thing about this is that this parameter xi has to be set to be very large, 10 to the 4, and this is already something that is not very promising. But since it is only one parameter that you play with, once you fix it, you are done. Okay? Now, to see how this works, remember that if you add here the gravity Lagrangian and you collect these two terms, what you learn is that this kind of coupling, if you dare extrapolating the range of the Higgs field to large values, then you have an effective Planck mass, which is just the standard Planck mass renormalized in this way. So that when there is a new scale in the problem, which I will call lambda I, which is m Planck over square root of xi, and taking psi positive all the time. Okay? Even before worrying about its size, I'm taking it positive. So for Higgs values beyond this scale, then gravity is essentially turned off because the Higgs mass, the Planck mass starts growing. Okay? So if you drop, if you take a line or take a circle in field space of size lambda I within this kind of setup, beyond this distance from the origin of the field space, it's like gravity is being turned off. Now, in order to see that this is enough to produce inflation for you, what you have to do, or the easiest way of arguing it, is going to the Einstein frame. So you basically remove the non-minimality from the coupling from gravity part of the action by rescaling the metric by 1 over this function. And then what this produces for you is just a single Einstein-Hilbert term in the gravity side. It makes the coupling of the Higgs to the matter non-minimal. Sorry, the coupling of gravity to the matter non-minimal if you started with minimal couplings, which means that it changes the kinetic terms of the Higgs and the kinetic terms of the fermions and of the Gauge fields. And it rescales the potential of the Higgs. Rescaling is very simple. So you get a new potential, U of H, which is just lambda over 4, H squared minus V squared to the 4, which is to the square, which is the previous one, divided by 1 plus psi H squared over the Planck square. And then you see that when you take your Higgs field beyond this region of field space in which it is which is set, if you say that this coupling, then what you find is a flat potential. This goes to a constant given by m Planck to the fourth over psi squared. So this is lambda over 4, lambda I to the 4. Okay? And this is a beautiful plateau. So if you draw the potential, you have the standard model here, then you get the lambda 5-4 term for a long time, and when you get to this scale, which is m Planck over root psi, then you develop a beautiful plateau that continues forever in this approximation. The height of this, again, is lambda, and I to the 4. So what these people want is to do inflation with this, okay? So you have a plateau, so you can achieve a slow roll. And you have the reheating also guaranteed, because as soon as you get into the normal region, where the coupling of the Higgs is normal, the Higgs couples strongly to everybody else, and then it will reheat very efficiently. So this single term in the action achieves this one of the most difficult feats in inflation theory, which is to make compatible a beautiful slow roll with efficient reheating. So you achieve it in this way by using this nonlinear tensor. Okay? Now, when you consider the details of the inflation in this model, you learn that for 60 folds, it's enough to just inflate during a region of H, which is of order 10 times delta I. So inflation is comfortably sub-Planckian if xi is large, so it looks nice. Okay? You can also see that when you compute the slow roll parameters, epsilon goes like lambda I over h to the 4. This is in the region where h is larger than lambda I, so deep into the plateau region. Eta will go like lambda I over h, yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're
not
going to
have Hubble constant
in the paper. It will only appear at the end. Sorry about that. Yeah, that's a point. So you see that it's eta dominated. Despite that, the spectral index is less than zero, less than one. Okay? And it's okay. You can fit. Well, about the fit, the Kobe normalization, when you compute it here, it will depend basically on the height of this potential, and then it will depend, it will fix for you psi. Then you can transform everything into the following form: lambda, number of defaults squared over, I think it's 72 pi squared psi squared. And this thing has to be of order 10 to the minus 9. So with 60 defaults and with the physical value for lambda that you cannot tune too much because lambda cannot be too small, okay, this is the lambda of the Higgs, forces you to choose C of the order 10 to the 4. But once you do this, basically all the parameters of inflation, all the physics of inflation turns out to be practically independent in this approximation of the Higgs mass, because corrections due to this term are power suppressed. In this region here, they are power suppressed by the ratio between 260 GeV and this scale, which happens to be not so far from the Planck scale, okay? So a factor of 100 below the Planck scale. So the model looks beautiful, allows reheating, so people is happy about it. And then when you go to the next bunch of papers, they take it seriously, and they start computing quantum corrections, which you suppose is going to be a worry in all this kind of setups. Okay? And well, what they find is another nice story. First of all, this one is fixed. Right? Ah, here is the ratio. Okay. So let me say the story of the corrections amount basically to two statements, or two, if you like, separate considerations. One is what happens to the corrections, the quantum corrections to the plateau, and the other is the quantum corrections to the pre-plateau region, the low energy region. Okay. In the plateau, it turns out that the plateau is pretty stable from quantum corrections due to standard model loops. So normalizable interactions of the standard model do not spoil the flatness of the plateau, because what happens is that once you go to the Einstein frame, since you have renormalized the metric in this way, this factor starts getting into the kinetic terms of the matter fields. So that makes the couplings non-minimal. And what happens is that all the masses of fermions and gauge fields, the mass squared, sorry, the masses, which are proportional to H, to the Higgs field, in a normal situation where you are at low energies, once you cross this boundary of lambda I, this term starts kicking on, and then what you get here is a square root. And you do it in detail, you get something that goes like this, both for fermions and for H fields. So you basically quench completely at H larger than lambda I, the Higgs dependence of the masses. And then when you compute, for example, one loop Coleman-Weinberg type of corrections of the form M effective to the fourth of H log M effective of H squared over mu, where mu is some normalization scale which you tie to the definition of the couplings that go into it. You see that as H goes beyond this regime in the plateau region, this non-minimal coupling basically makes these masses H independent, and therefore this doesn't spoil the flatness. And this effect is very fast and very efficient. Okay? So it only renormalizes, if you like, the total height of the potential, and this will be controlled by the size of the couplings that interfere, the lambda, etc. So if you are able to say that the couplings of the standard model are running in a way that you don't hit any strong coupling region, then this effect, this funny nonlinear effect in the coupling to the matter sector, ensures that the plateau will be stable. Okay? They check this. The second point that they check is even more interesting, is the fact that, as you know, when you run, basically the running in the low energy region will be basically the question of how the self-coupling of the Higgs is running. And the self-coupling of the Higgs is affected strongly from by the fact that the top is very heavy. So you get the usual situation for the beta function. So you get this structure, for example, where one loop, where you get here the beta function of lambda phi 4, and here you get the contribution from the top Yukawa cap, which is large. So this term causes the self-coupling of the Higgs to want to go negative, and in principle, if the mass of the Higgs over the mass of the top is small enough, then you could hit problems of stability because you could drive lambda negative. And this is the basis of the stability bounds. On MH. So these forces, well, the stability bounds go in various classes. There is the phenomenological stability bound, which has to do with the fact that you need to have a metastable state with a lifetime which is longer than the age of the universe. There is the absolute stability bound, that you may not want even metastability, but you may want total stability. And then there is the bound that is worked out by these people, in which, of course, if the running of the lambda is affected and is getting more negative, or like is growing not so fast, that will affect the matching of the slow roll parameters. So by these logarithmic corrections, you get the memory on the matching to the slow roll parameters from the value of the Higgs mass. So without really hitting the instability, you are already affecting the predictions of inflation if you take the Higgs mass too low, okay? Too close to the problem, to the point where the potential could be doing the waterfall. And what you find is basically that there is a bound of order 130 GeV for the Higgs mass. And if you approach this limit, then the spectral index becomes significantly dependent on M Higgs over M top. And this is very good, or very nice for these people, because this is measured by Planck and this is measured by LHC. Okay? So this is a prediction, if you like. Now there is also the other bound at the upper point, which is of order 190 GeV, which is simply the bound that if the Higgs is heavy, then of course if the running will not be affected by the top too much, so it will go running like in lambda phi 4, and it will hit a Landau pole, and you want this Landau pole to occur, or if you like the strong coupling regime, you want it to occur after this point, when the running changes because of the nonlinear terms. Okay? You don't want the lambda pole to come below lambda I. And this gives you a triviality type bound, okay, of this order. So this is, if you like, concludes the review of these papers. The model is beautiful because it's very minimal in terms of the ingredients that you use. Basically, you reduce anything that you don't have in the standard model, except the Higgs. And once you fix one parameter, which is this admittedly hard to swallow value of 10 to the fourth, you are in business. It's very beautiful. And you even make interesting relationships between parameters that you measure in different parts of the world. So,
how one? I guess it's a very small effect.
is very small effect at low energies.
Yes. But will it, if the field moves, will it also give time variation? Or?
In principle, yes.
Sorry.
It's not made for selfie. Okay, so yes.
Spectral index as a function of fixed mass, say. So we know the spectral index. So what is the? I mean, does it narrow down the fixed mass power?
It is within this this window, which actually is not so different from the terminological window, just yeah. from the precision measurements and light acceptors. But as you push the fixed mass to the lower part of this window, for example, then this spectral index gets increases. So you can hit 0.99 at some point. But the rate of increase is very sensitive to the value of the top mass, which is a known pool. Because you can tolerate errors in the Higgs mass, but not so much in the top mass. And you need the precise measurements of the top mass at the LHC in order to be able to, you know, to decide in which curve of the spectral index you are.
Say, right? I mean, you say that radio wave magnetic distance before.
So when you do the quantum corrections, the that is the determination based on the classical analysis. When you do the one loop approximation, depending on where you sit in this window, psi will change. So as you move closer to the lower bound, psi goes down a little bit, and instead of 10 to the 4, it becomes 10 to the 3. Still large. Okay? So, yes. The logs start creeping in the feet. And the bottom line is that you can live with successful inflation if you are in this window. And as you approach the limits of this window, the spectral index goes away from the experimental window to go larger than 0.99.
But is it clear that, so this is the two-loop calculation, or this has been done through two loops, is this first?
Well, it's two-loop calculation, although they don't agree themselves about whether it's correctly done. Probably in the last iteration of the papers, they already know. But there was some discussion on a typical thing that some of them were forgetting diagrams and things like that. Okay. But in principle, it's a two-loop normalization group improved calculation on the patch.
But is it clear if you add more loops, then this distribution remains the same, that the corrections don't get big from higher order loops?
No. In principle, since the loop calculation gives you a small correction,
okay,
the only thing that happens is that if you add more loops, you could start defining better this window, but experimental errors will not allow you to resolve, for example, this ratio. It's a strongly nominated error in the top mass, which is but the arguments basically are based on weak coupling below the inflation scale, and then these nonlinear effects due to the non-minimal coupling quench the quantum corrections in the platform. And this is something that works at all loops.
So that's the part that's surprising, that this is an unnormalizable theory. But somehow you're saying that that's okay.
These are only the standard model loops.
Okay, not Higgs loops, that's the thing.
Yeah, Higgs loops. But loops with the coupling of the standard model.
Yeah, but Higgs is non-normalizable now. So you have all these. So this is an unnormalizable theory.
Yes.
But all the corrections are small somehow.
Yes. First of all, the gravity sector is rendered, if you go to the Einstein frame, the gravity sector is rendered in black
sure.
and
brown. Forget
all corrections there will be suppressed by Planck scale.
Sure.
Of course, the fact that they say the normalizable couplings hides the fact, which is very important in the platform, that I am redefining the coupling by these nonlinear terms coming from the non-minimality of the coupling. Okay? So, yes, I'm working with a non-normalizable theory, and I'm just stating that the thing that they did is to consider the diagrams that are normalizable near an original field space and extrapolate. So you extrapolate them in the region of large field strength, and the result of the extrapolation is that the plateau is quenched. Quantum corrections in the plateau are quenched. So whatever makes the plateau flat in the classical approximation continues to make it flat as far as the loop diagram that was not a standard loop diagram near the region. Now, our remark, the remark that we are making, which is very simple, is that in this model there is a hidden extra scale. So there is a scale in this model, which is an effective infinity scale. By that I mean that it's set by the size of the non-normalizable operators in this model, which is not the naive lambda I, which is M plan over root C. You see, if you have this as the natural scale of the problem, which is something is suggested, for example, when you look at the potential there, and if you look at it from the point of view of low energy, you expand this potential in powers of H, what you get is a bunch of operators that are suppressed by powers of lambda I squared. Because everything comes with psi over M Planck squared. So this is h squared over lambda I squared. Okay? So the natural scale that sets the non-normalizable operators that you get just by expanding this is the inflation scale. Okay? So you would say, okay, if I redefine the Lagrangian, the original one, by operators which are arbitrary, respecting the symmetries, and are suppressed by this scale, I might accept the equilibrium of the plateau. Why? Because you see that plateau depends on the coincidental fact that I have an H4 in the numerator and an H, actually there is, yeah, H squared, H4, and an H4 in the denominator. So if I modify with a non-normalizable operator the potential of the Higgs, and I then extrapolate beyond lambda I may upset clearly the plateau unless I do the same on the coupling function to the curvature, okay? The one that appears in the denominator. But you could say that this is, this would mean that I should engineer the fine-tuning of the slow roll parameters of the plateau by hand, just like I do with a typical supergravity inflation model, where epsilon and eta, I have to explicitly fine-tune them to this model. Because generically they will not come, they will come of order one because of the color potential there. So that would be, if you like, a situation of a natural situation in inflation models, if you like. You become very picky and you want to say, no, I only want beautiful and natural models. Then you have to invent some way of suppressing all these operators that you put up there. But if you want to happen, you want to be natural, then you have to fine tune by hand the potential or find a method to do it. Our statement is that the situation for this model is much worse than this, which would be the natural, the usual technical naturality, non-naturality of inflation. Because the effective scale of this model, lambda, happens to be M Planck over psi, which is smaller than lambda I. Because there is an extra power of root psi. And since psi is large, there is a factor of 100 here. So you are extrapolating the theory which has into a region which is much above the region in which much above the scale in which the theory becomes strongly coupled because of non-normalizable operators. Okay? So to explain why this scale is not apparent in these formulas or in the potential, for example, is the remaining of the problem. Now, this scale can be obtained just by a simple power counting analysis of the original operator psi h squared r. It's actually very simple. If you expand r around flat space, so you expand the metric eta plus 1 over m Planck h, then what you get is psi h squared, and then you get a term which is 1 over m Planck second derivative of H, and then you get 1 over M Planck squared dH dH plus things interaction. Yeah? Normally we drop this because this is a total derivative, but now because there is dH, we have to keep it. This operator here, when you combine it with there, you get psi over m Planck squared h squared dH squared. And this is a dimension 6 operator with natural scale given by lambda I. So this operator can be written as 1 over lambda I squared h squared dH squared.
Frame, but now we're doing the power counting in the Jordan frame. So what are the rules? I mean, I just don't know. What are the rules?
I will do that. Okay. Yeah. I'm just motivating now. We'll do that. It will be the same, okay? Because I'm near the origin of the space. Because to establish what is the natural highly scalable theory as an effective theory, you have to start from low energies and see when the description breaks down. So I have to start from small things. Okay? And near small Higgs, the differences between Einstein frame and Jordan frame are things that you can expand with powers. And by keeping track of the powers, you will see, or one can see, the scales appearing. Okay. So for now, I will just, motivate in a very naive way where I can find this scale. In principle, the change of Jordan frame to Einstein frame shouldn't change the physics if you read it correctly. And if you don't break any approximation, but you're assuming on one side by going to the other.
Are you thinking in terms of classical gravitational waves here or this quantum gravity effect? If for a classical gravitational wave, you would introduce the point mass here.
No, I'm doing graviton.
This is quantum gravity.
Yeah. I'm expanding. I'm taking now. The gravity theory is an effective theory, and I'm expanding it around the Cauchy space. And I will compute loops with it, just like I do with the pions. So this operator here, as you see, is different. This one goes like psi over n Planck squared, over n Planck, h squared, h squared, h. And this one is dimension 5, and it has the scale 1 over lambda in front. But lambda is this lower scale. So here we found this scale, and you can ask now, why am I not seeing this scale in the potential? Okay. What happens to this scale? Now the answer is that by just an argument of power counting, finding a scale by a power counting argument is not enough, because this could be a redundant operator. Maybe it could be an operator that could change its coefficient by adding a multiple of equations of motion. And in fact, it turns out that this operator is exactly a redundant operator in the limit in which the self-coupling of the Higgs goes to zero. So if the Higgs was free, although I can still identify this operator around the Minkowski space and Minkowski space by the power counting, it will be a redundant operator.
Is that because it's a total derivative without the h squared or not related?
I don't know how to answer that. I don't know if that is the culprit or not. I know that you can explicitly see. So I will tell you how it works. So now I will try to use this. So the first thing you see is that I can remove all these operators at once by going to the Einstein frame. Okay?
I go to the Einstein frame, and then I am left only in the gravity sector with the canonical term. And then everything else doesn't talk anymore at the three level with the R. Okay? And we know that at the level of the coupling to the fermions and the H fields, and at the level of the potential of the Higgs, the only scale that appears is lambda I. Okay, because the only function that appears there is multiplicatively this function 1 plus psi x squared n Planck squared. So where did the scale lambda go? Maybe by this field definition I already made it redundant, okay? Because you know it's field definition which is the game. However, that's not the case because, as you know, if I rescale the metric by e to the minus sigma, give me mu, if there's some function sigma, then R is rescaled like this, plus 3 total derivative of sigma minus 3 halves derivative of sigma squared. So I do get corrections to the kinetic term of the Higgs from here. Okay, e to the sigma is 1 plus psi h squared over m Planck squared. So when I take into account these terms, I find that the kinetic term of the Higgs gets modified. It is becomes from 1 half dh squared goes to 1 half dh squared over 1 plus psi h squared over m Planck squared. And then there is another term, which is 3 psi squared over m Planck squared h dh squared 1 plus psi h squared over m Planck squared. So you see, this term is again of the sort that only talks to lambda I. But now if I pick here the leading term, forgetting about this correction, taking the one here, this term here that comes from here is dependent on lambda, not on lambda I. So there is an operator here which is dimension 6, which is 3 over lambda squared h squared dh squared. So it shows up here again. But now you could say, okay, but I can remove even these operators by going to a canonical field. I can just redefine h, which I still didn't do, and make it canonical because it's just one field.
Didn't you have to go to the canonical?
Yeah, but I didn't tell you. Yeah, I cannot explain everything. Everything is correctly done with these papers. Forgotten.
So that effective potential, is that in terms of the canonical peaks or?
When you compute the solar parameters, you have to define them. They are naturally defined in the books in terms of the canonical peaks. So if you want to express them in terms of H, you have to make the transformation.
So that's going to be more complicated.
But that can be done. So if I want to go to canonical field now here, I can do it by solving this equation, d5, which will be my canonical field equal dh, square root of 1 plus psi h squared over m Planck squared plus 6 psi squared h squared over m Planck squared divided by 1 plus psi h squared over m Planck squared. So I solve this equation. Okay. Now this equation, you can solve it in two regimes. In the regime of the plateau, where h is very large, okay, and then you find that h is exponentially related to phi. So in fact, when expressed in terms of the canonical field, the plateau is exponentially accurate. So the potential is of the form constant 1 plus e to the constant phi. So phi is the canonical field. It's a very good plateau. On the other hand, if you expand it around low energy, just to see what are the scales involved from the point of view of low energy physics, what dominates is this term here, which is the only term that talks about, that knows about lambda. Because the combination with Planck mass here involves psi squared. Yeah. So it turns out that in the low energy regime, this canonical transformation of the field is dominated actually by this term. Because psi is large, remember, psi is 10 to the 4. So this term is going to dominate this field of definition. And the result of this is that h, after the field of definition, is phi times 1 plus order phi squared over lambda squared. So at low energies, only lambda appears in the field of definition. Okay? So lambda
although you try to remove it, always comes back. And then at the end, from the term lambda h to the 4 in the Higgs potential, by making the substitution to phi, what you get is lambda phi 4 1 plus order phi squared over lambda squared. And then this brings you the operator phi to the 6 lambda over lambda squared, which is a dimension 6 operator with a scale lambda. And I have removed all my freedom to do field redefinitions. So this one is not ambiguous. Okay? So really, this theory has a scale lambda. And there is a full tower of them with this scale. There is a superposed tower of operators suppressed by lambda I. So there's like a hierarchy of operators in this approximation. After I let them run by the normalization group, they will mix. And these guys will dominate always at any energy scale. Okay? So, well, strictly speaking, you see there is lambda here. So if I put lambda to 0, this whole tower goes away. Because at the end, all the effects of lambda were in the field of definition to canonical field. Okay? So if I am left with no couplings in which to exercise this field of definition, I am left with no vestige of psi, of the parameter that I started defining before. So if I have a free dilaton, or a free scalar field coupled minimally to the scalar curvature, and this guy doesn't self-couple and doesn't couple to matter fields, then I can remove it completely. The coupling, the psi coupling, I can remove it completely. Okay, by the field definition. So power counting to identify the scale is not enough. You need to do some more work. But you see that for the interacting field, this scale is true. In fact, the effective scale, as you see, is actually lambda over the square root of lambda. And that brings the possibility of playing a little bit with lowering lambda. To increase this scale and make it approach lambda I. Remember that the scale of inflation had a square root of lambda in front. You know, the vacuum energy. So both of them would like to probably join if you make lambda small. But you don't have too much space to make lambda small while really taking this as the Higgs. On the other hand, there are also operators of the form phi. Yeah. I'm saying that I have some latitude to increase the expected scale if I want, if I take into account this slight normalization. If you wanted to make the scales together, lambda I and lambda, you could try to play that game. I'm not willing to play that game because there are also operators like this for n arbitrarily large, and the effective scale for these operators is of the form lambda over lambda 1 to n, and this goes to lambda when n goes to infinity. So in fact, the higher dimension operators tend to obliterate, if you like, the effect of the taking small lambda here. Okay? But since this is a game that I will not play anyway, let's just say that we have identified the lower scale. And this lower scale is hierarchically smaller than the inflation scale for this particular modeling, which I'm forced to take psi to be very large if I want to do phenomenology. Now, after this, we can play a little bit to show how this makes life difficult for the model, because what happens is that we are extrapolating into a region of field space which is way beyond the region in which the theory is defined as an effective theory. Since the original operator that I chose is already an effective operator, I cannot play the game of saying that this operator is given by God and the rest I will try to fix. Okay? I should be able to say that this operator is generated along with others on the same scale. If that operator has a scale lambda, should be others also on the same scale, unless I find a way of eliminating them based on some dynamics.
One activity they are doing that would be a minimum of size in the project.
shift symmetry in the Higgs space, and at some point you break. So then it's very natural to have something flat, and the thing that's unnatural is having a potential which is not flat. And so that's naturally explained why all of these guys should cancel each other, because you have the symmetry that you're just breaking, right?
Well, you see, life is more difficult than that in this model, because even if you
manage to suppress operators at the level of the curvature coupling, you also have to suppress them in the Higgs potential, and these two suppressions have to be hand in hand. Why? Because let's say that you consider a generic Lagrangian at the scale lambda with a coupling which contains the one that we want, so psi h squared r, okay? But then you have also others which would be coming like psi h squared h 2n over lambda 2n r, for example, and others. But let's concentrate on these ones. If I put h lambda squared here and I put lambda squared here, then this will all, I can deal with all these with a function of h squared, of h over lambda, which will be an even function, which will be of order one. The Taylor expansion of this function will be coupling of order one, times r times lambda squared psi. This is m squared over psi. So whenever I have the function 1 plus psi x h squared over m Planck squared, I will have the function 1 plus 1 over psi f of h of lambda. Okay. And if I improve also, if you like, generalize the potential of the Higgs at the scale lambda to be given by arbitrary operators suppressed by that scale lambda, something that from the point of view of low energy is completely compatible, because lambda is a very high scale, then the Jordan frame potential of the Higgs generically will be something of the form lambda to the fourth function v of h over lambda, where v is again a function of arbitrary of order one. Now, when I play the game with this theory, what I get is a potential u of h, which will be lambda to the fourth v over 1 plus 1 over psi f squared. This is the potential that they get. The inflation regime will be f larger than psi. This is the analog of the inflation regime in the other case. And in that case, I will go to lambda to the fourth v over f squared. And then I need these two functions to have the same asymptotics at large values of the field. Actually, at values of the argument which are much beyond the scale lambda. The scale lambda was the scale that signaled just the limit of information that I have on these functions from low energy. I can reconstruct these functions from low energy as a polynomial in h over lambda. Now I'm asking you to extrapolate that for an arbitrary truncation that you do based on experimental accuracy, for example. And then ask what happens at very large values beyond lambda of this ratio. These two functions have to go hand in hand. They have to be canceling each other to great accuracy to have a plateau. This happened in the original model because for some reason people just added the simplest possible term, which is h squared. And in the Higgs potential, you have h to the 4 and 2 plus 2 equals 4. But if you start playing the natural game, then the plateau is immediately jeopardized, unless you find a reason to correlate the effective Lagrangian in the curvature term and in the pure Higgs term. There is no symmetry that I know that achieves. Okay? So that's the basic statement, if you like, what I want to make. The second one is that once you play this game of the general functions, you can also do the analog thing that we did here with the canonical redefinition. So you can make the field canonical, and you can prove that in general, for arbitrary f and arbitrary v, this statement that we made, that at low energies, the scale, the relevant scale is lambda, that goes through also. Okay? So you can analyze the general field definition and show that at low energies you only see lambda for the periodic functions in the short, which is kind of not because it's part of the game. We are stating that these functions are given scale lambda. So I think I wanted to say something else. Okay. For example, one example which is very illustrative of how things can go horribly wrong. Take, for example, the following function. F of x will be x squared. So this is just the original function that we were taken by Shaposnikov, by everybody, simple one, h squared. But the V function, the one that controls the Higgs potential, let me say that is some kind of quasi-periodic function, approximate quasi-periodic function of x squared, like a sine or cosine, something irregular of this sort, with typical scale lambda like this. But something kind of periodic, okay? Like a landscape, the kind of thing that you will get if the Higgs would be part of a moduli of string theory, and you would have one of these situations where you have landscape potentials with features on some scale, but no particular. Yeah, yeah. So in this case, when you go to the potential along the plateau, in terms of the canonical field, by the way, the canonical field is related for f much larger than psi, which is the inflation region. You have that f goes like a psi e to root 2/3 phi over n plus, where phi is the canonical field. So this potential along the, when you compute it along the plateau for these two functions, goes like a lambda to the 4. E to the minus 2 root 2/3 phi over n plus. And then this function p of psi e to the 2/3 phi over n plus. So you see, this is a more or less a periodic function. This is an exponential. So this term alone, what it does is that it contracts the oscillations of the potential arbitrarily fast. You go along, and this one quenches it with an exponential. So hardly a plateau through inflation. Okay, it's not a, you cannot do inflation with this. Okay. So and this is for a very natural, if you like, kind of potential that you could imagine coming as the Wilsonian action of integrating out string theory. The last comment I want to make is to bring the Hubble constant. So Hubble constant, root VI over M Planck. When you compute it for this model, it is of order lambda, root of lambda, times M Planck over Xi. So it ends up being root lambda times lambda. And this is uncomfortable. This is a remark made in the paper of Burgess et al. Because this is not very nice because this is the scale of the seated temperature for an observer that is just sitting in commoving inflating region. Okay? So this is the scale of the energy that goes into the quantum fluctuations. And it's uncomfortably close to the cutoff of your theory. So it brings into question the whether you can really calculate self-consistently the generation of fluctuations in this theory using such an effective theory. Okay. It brings into question that you may need ultraviolet information to do the calculations for that, okay, because you are too close actually to the cutoff scale. You have a seated temperature which is almost cutoff of your effective theory. So this is basically the what I wanted to say. So as before, the essential comment is that there is a scale which is much lower than the naive inflation scale. This scale is a little bit hidden. One has to dig it out. And since the whole game of Higgs inflation is an extrapolation into the unknown, into a large field strength based on, close your eyes and see when you compute the corrections that it will not be spoiled. Okay. The fact that the true scale of this model with respect to non-normalizable operators is really lower than you thought means that the extrapolation is really pretty arbitrary. Okay. And therefore, in my opinion, it removes some of or large chunk of the interest in this model. So that's a talk. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from Jose?
I have a question. It's maybe a little technical and maybe not so interesting.
If it is technical, you answer it yourself.
Maybe it's not interesting at all. So just that I am diagonal reading of Stravinsky's paper, I ran into the comment that so in the potential there is a trace anomaly contribution, which depends on frames. So if you calculate it in one frame, it gives you some answer. If you calculate it in another frame, it gives you a different answer. Is that relevant at all?
So I don't know. Which exercise is not relevant? Mm-hmm. Because he says that when you take into account that this nonlinear effect in the couplings when you go into the plateau, that that effect will not. That is relevant to the normalization of psi. Whether psi gets elliptic for normalization, logarithmic normalization, which is important. And okay, which says that it's not important because what makes the plateau flat also makes the normalization of psi basically flat in the plateau region. The same effect, although they present it in a way which is kind of well, it's equivalent to what I said, but they prefer to present it in a non-canonical frame for the Higgs. So you have this all this metric here, and then the propagators get a power of an inverse power of this. So when you trace in the diagrams the presence of this term, which is like a window function, this like a function that is 1 for h below lambda I, and is 0 approximately for h above lambda I, or small, power suppressed. They claim that when you take this into account, then the naive strong normalization that you will get for psi from this from anomaly gets washed away. But you probably know what I'm doing, because I didn't really go deep into the issue. Well, which success is okay.
Yeah. One of the co-authors of the paper with Cliff. So we did say this about the Hubble scale.
Yes.
But you did, so I just wanted to kind of point out, we did say not just that. We said basically all you also said was it. Well, one thing you did say, which caught my attention, you said you just couldn't simply do a power counting analysis. And I wasn't sure if you were just commenting on our paper.
I can do a power counting analysis. I claim that it's not enough.
Well, I don't really think that's true. All you need to do is scattering, and then you find that this very term leads you to unitary violation, which sets your upper limit on energy, which tells you what the scale is.
Yeah,
so in what way does that argument
if
fail?
If you do that argument for the theory with our Higgs potential, that scattering amplitude, when you evaluate the potential, will be zero. So,
I don't think that's actually true, right? I mean, this is Higgs scattering through graviton or graviton Higgs scattering, and it just
cancels.
Comes.
Well,
it doesn't.
The whole scattering amplitude. Is
there's no other coupling there to redefine.
Yeah, I just showed you the Higgs. I showed you a field definition that removes the coupling.
So, which coupling are you removing with your field definition?
This one, the original.
Okay, but if you do that, then you don't have Higgs inflation at all.
I put it in other places. Okay, I put it in other places. Now I showed you that I can remove it from everywhere except from this lambda pi 4 1 plus pi squared or lambda squared. But for that, I need lambda to be also. If the scalar field is free, this coupling is completely redundant. I can remove it completely by a typical definition if it is free, exactly. That is not the case. Okay? So the point I wanted to make is that power counting is okay and is generically good, but if you are looking at a particular model with a particular operator, somebody could tell you, hey, maybe this is a random operator, and there are examples in which it is. So what we did was just to check that power counting is okay.
It is okay.
Yeah.
I mean, because in this case, I mean, all you need to do is the scattering amplitude, and you just know that the scattering amplitude tells you unitarity cloud operator. And I mean, you can make, I mean, if you're making the argument that argument will fail, what is then your statement with respect to that scattering amplitude? What are you saying that graviton peak scattering would be?
I don't know, because you see.
It'll come back, right? Its unitarity is being violated. So you're just shifting things around with field reduction.
Well, you have to be careful, because you have to compute all the diagrams that contribute to that scattering amplitude and evaluate it on shares, and there can be calculations. Not just on one diagram, but from others. And you see,
So part of the point of the power counting analysis is it gives you a whole blast of scattering.
Right.
It's not just one amplitude. It's not just Higgs through graviton, right? It's graviton Higgs as well. And you can't just say that, you know, they're all going to cancel you. Because, I mean, the power counting leads you to the point where you actually find
all of
those things.
If you're asking me if I did the exercise of computing scattering amplitude and seeing that it's cancelled, I did it. But I gave you an independent argument that...
Your claim is unfounded.
Because otherwise you would claim that redundant operators would never be a problem, and they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your claim then that power counting is insufficient is not founded by an actual calculation. You're just saying it could, in principle,
for a particular operator,
not necessarily this case.
Not in general. In general, power counting would be okay, but it could be that you are unlucky because you are looking at a particular operator that could be redundant.
Mm-hmm.
And what I claim is that if this theory, you take it, the scalar graviton theory just with this coupling, plus gravity plus canonically normalized Higgs field with no potential, in that case this operator is completely redundant.
Yeah, but that isn't the case here, right? There is a potential.
There is a potential, and
that's the whole point of the model, is that there is a potential,
right? So I'm not in disagreement with anything that you say.
Yes, yeah, so I would say your statement about power counting not being sufficient for Higgs inflation is not relevant. Like, did you agree with that? Like, you're saying in principle it could be not relevant, but for Higgs inflation.
I said what I said. I said that power counting is okay.
All right, I just want
to. In general, you have to check it if you are looking at a particular example. Mm-hmm. Here we are looking. I mean, as people. Constructs a very particular model with a very particular operator in which they base everything.
Mm.
So, first thing that Shaposnikov said when we were talking about this, is this has to be a redundant operator. He said this has to be a redundant operator. So we have to work to convince him that it wasn't a redundant operator.
But in some sense, I mean, the power coming. If you just do a power counting analysis, it isn't just a statement about operators, right? It allows you to actually analyze scattering amplitudes.
Right.
And it's a more powerful approach, actually.
Yes,
just,
at the end,
just expanding
be,
operators.
At the end, it should be equivalent to doing all the possible field definitions that you can do to remove the cut.
Mm.
Because basically, what you have to do is to add the operator is redundant if the change in the coupling is proportional to the equation of motion. So when you evaluate the S matrix on shell, this change of the coupling will have no effect on the matrix. So you may take it to zero. But this change of the coupling is like a by a term which is proportional to the equation of motion is something that happens if you can change it by a field definition. So
you can always do field definitions, but I just don't think that the relevant complaint to this particular model.
Well, I claim that
there
it
is potential.
I claim that it is. I claim that it's okay, and I claim that in order to be sure, you have to check it. It's not a redundant operator.
But it has potential, so we know it's not.
Right.
So what more is there to check?
Nothing. I just I just told you that you can be sure that it's
so, but it's okay. So I mean, actually, so let's say that you say that you sum all the diagrams and the sum wireless unitarity. That just means that the perturbation theory is broken down.
Well, it could mean that, or it could mean that you go over to another theory.
Yeah, but so it could be, yeah, but it could be one or the other. So it doesn't mean that the theory is right. Just that the perturbation theory is fine and that and that describes the perturbation.
Yeah, but if you have it's not good if it's just perturbation theory breaking down, because then you'll have collective modes of strong coupling, and you'll still have the scale. It doesn't help
if you just say the perturbation theory inside another one. Every time you put this one, you get a contribution to the amplitude, which goes like the energy that enters this region divided by lambda. So from summing up these guys, you are in trouble if you go near this couple.
So that means that the perturbation theory is broken now?
No, not necessarily.
Yeah, it's broken if you don't do anything about it. You can resum it or whatever, but normally what happens is that some other physics kicks in a little below lambda. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, G Fermi, this could be G Fermi. Okay. But before 250 GeV, MWP kicks in. And the theory remains weakly coupled because before you get to lambda, these exchanges remaining weakly coupled. So
we thought about his statement because Shvishkov did put out a paper after our paper. And you know, those are your two options. It's either, you have some strong coupling or you just have to go over to some other theory. But even if it's just strong coupling, there will be characteristic scales in the strong coupling sector, right? There'll be collective modes. There'll be something that has a mass scale. This scale will still be there. So it's not a relevant statement to just say that it's, well, for Shvishkov to say that it's just going to be some strong coupling and that it's still okay. It's, in both cases, you go over to a non-predictive regime of the theory.
But it's true, but I mean, I don't know. There is nothing wrong. So those calculations, the loop calculations around the classical background, they are well defined because they don't rely on perturbation around the vacuum. They rely on perturbation around some time dependent background. And it's perfectly fine. And I can completely imagine that perturbation theory around one vacuum fails, but around another vacuum or time dependent background doesn't fail. So since the perturbation theory in waveguide hasn't broken down, then I don't have any reason to suspect that. But since perturbation theory around the standard model vacuum breaks down, then I can suspect that.
Well, my take on that is that all the information you have about the effective Lagrangian comes from low energy in this picture.
No, I agree with your statement.
The driving equation is an unnormalizable operator for the beginning. And therefore, what do you know about the model? You don't know the model up to Wooten scale, you just know
sure.
The model below that scale. Okay? And you parameterize your ignorance by this operator. And then you may ask yourself, is this operator all I have, or I have others? If you take the attitude that you have generic operators compatible with that scale, which is a natural attitude, then I claim that the extrapolation that you make to obtain the plateau is jeopardized. Okay? But that's the point. That you cannot believe the plateau if you really take seriously the idea that at that low scale there is generic operators.
That I agree.
You can. This is not killing the model because somebody could come and say, "Look, this was given to me by God and nothing else." Okay? And there is a fantastic mechanism which produces this operator at this scale and nothing else until lambda r. The next non-normalizable operator appears at lambda r. Okay. If you have that mechanism, it's okay. You can realize this, but it is on you who are pushing this idea to find that mechanism.
Yeah, sure.
So this is not killing the model, it just makes it
unnatural.
Ugly, in the sense that when you read all these papers, it looks like it's perfect.
So any short questions or comments?
So just one comment related to that. So one thing you did say in your paper was that you were making a stronger claim, but there you weren't making a stronger claim. You were saying kind of what we were saying in the earlier paper, where it's an uncomfortable scale, but in principle it could happen. But then in your paper, at least as far as I remember, you were making a stronger claim that it just rules
out.
I
make a stronger claim that I don't believe that the plateau exists.
Okay.
Even if the plateau exists, then your point is that you have to find, if you like, the scale of new physics that renders the theory replicable. You only can put it in a very narrow range. Because
yeah, that's our point. Yeah.
Right? You have lambda, so you have root lambda times lambda, smaller than the mass scale of the new physics. Smaller than lambda. So if you want the theory not to hit a strong coupling, you have to have new physics like W max effect.
Yeah.
Coming a little bit before, so the theory can remain coupled. But at the same time, if you don't want the Hubble parameter to be above your cutoff in your scale of new physics, so that you cannot believe anything of an effective model, you need to be below this scale. And this is a very narrow range.
Yeah, so that was our claim. And you were saying in your paper that you guys had a stronger claim. And then here you were just kind of rescinding.
No, our stronger claim is just an opinion, is that we don't believe that
okay.
We don't believe the plateau will exist in general.
That's fine.
Okay. So there's no disagreement. It's just a question of attitude, or if you like, optimism versus pessimism.
Well, let's thank Jose again.